B-Pod Studios.
Yes! Hello, my broken brigade! 'Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy! And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes! Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and in Google Podcasts. Seth Rollins is the new WWE Universal Champion. He defeated Brock Lesnar in the main event of SummerSlam, a show that we'll be discussing for the next, hopefully, 40 minutes or so. Mike, I'm kind of surprised that they actually had a legitimate match, and it was a really strong match. I felt like both competitors, Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins, emptied out the bucket. I think they did everything possible to make Seth Rollins, this was a statement win for Seth Rollins. And now the question is, where does it go from here?
You know, and that was going to be my exact question. Where does Seth Rollins go from here if he were to lose? And, you know, we mentioned it last week and the week before that I thought he needed a character redevelopment if he were to lose, go away for a little bit. But this was a redefining moment here for him, a win over Brock Lesnar. You know, he had Brock cornered into the match a little bit, pushed him into the post. Brock caught him for the third time when he jumped through the ropes there. That kind of turned things around for a little bit. But then Seth got him onto the Spanish announce table where he had that frog splash through there. Great deal of athleticism. I thought that was the defining moment of the match right there. And sure as heck enough, here he is right here, wins the match, the only championship to change hands at SummerSlam.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, but going into that, James, I did not think of a particular defining moment for SummerSlam. Now, not taking away any of the matches or the entrances and so forth, but when you look back on it, that is going to be your signature moment of SummerSlam 2019, Seth Rollins beating Brock Lesnar, and they needed that to happen. And I think WWE was mentally playing with us a little bit, having Becky Lynch go on first. Maybe she'll come down for the main event. Didn't do it, but that was Seth Rollins' moment right there. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. I mean, Roman Reigns is available. Drew McIntyre, they weren't on the card. So maybe one of those guys goes right after him, The Miz. So many possibilities.
So I tend to think that was done. This seemed to me like a very paint-by-numbers show. Mm-hmm. In saying that, I wouldn't have been surprised either way if Brock or Seth had won. And now that I see Seth has won in the manner in which he did win, that is, as you said, the defining moment of SummerSlam. Before that, I want to say that this was a really good show with an exception here or there. But the moments that you're going to walk away with is Seth Rollins having his victory, his win, and Brock Lesnar actually having a match of length. And right. The official time, according to Wikipedia, was 13:25 on Seth Rollins beating him, which would have been the third longest match of the show. Kofi versus Orton, Charlotte versus Trish were longer.
Yep.
But Seth Rollins really needed this type of win. And as one of my friends mentioned to me in a text message, it looks like he was being booked as ECW's Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah.
Beat up, beat up, beat up, coming from way underneath to win. But the difference is Tommy Dreamer didn't win until like the promotion was almost over.
Yeah.
But we're in a different era now. But I think the fact that Seth won in the manner in which he did, which was the jumping off the ring post, splash through the table, and then the third stomp, and there was no kick out at three. It was a definitive, this was the finish. Seth Rollins beat Brock Lesnar, who now is apparently vulnerable.
Right.
He's a vulnerable superstar. So to answer my question of where I think it goes, I have to assume that this is going to lead to Hell in a Cell. And they have another match because that's how WWE has traditionally operated. I think Hell in a Cell is the next pay-per-view.
Clash of Champions.
Clash of Champions. So maybe not Clash of Champions. Of course, on Wikipedia, it says UK TakeOver, which, of course,
I saw that.
Clash of Champions is next, and then Hell in a Cell is October 6th. October.
Right. Early.
Yeah, a lot of these have been early.
Yeah, but you know why? Because
NBA season?
Halloween. Well, yeah. No, well, Halloween is
Crown Jewel.
Crown Jewel. Yeah. So
The $50 million that they could have invested in the network. I mean, the network is actually the big story about how it failed so many people, including myself. But
well, what do you use?
There's nothing real. So I usually watch on a PlayStation 4.
Okay.
And then once that failed, I went to the computer, and look, it's hardwired. It's from my router into my computer, hardwired on both the PlayStation and the computer. So there's no reason for it to fail.
Well, I've never received a check in my life from Apple. I've only paid bills to them, so I can strongly recommend the Apple TV. It is fantastic. No issue on that.
So it wasn't until the network did this whole reboot, and now they look like Netflix and all that stuff. But I don't want to dwell on that. A lot of people had network problems. I was one of them. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in the history of the network that I can recall having an issue. Maybe I had an isolated incident however long ago, but I don't remember it. But this is the first time that I can think of that I have had an issue with the network.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
But I know a lot of other people did. Speaking of issues with things, terrible finish from the Kofi Kingston Randy Orton match. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, this was the match, Mike, I was most looking forward to.
You were excited.
I wanted a definitive Kofi Kingston Randy Orton moment.
Right.
This to me wasn't even a good WWE championship match. Mm. And realistically, as the match was progressing, when Orton hit the RKO from the top rope, that should have been it. I was like, that's the finish. Orton's winning the title.
Right.
Nope. And my network paused and froze. And the next thing that I saw was Kofi beating Orton up with a kendo stick. So he was disqualified, or there was a double count out, or whatever it was. It wasn't a finish that I wanted. It wasn't a finish that Toronto wanted. And it wasn't a finish that WWE needed to showcase on a big-time pay-per-view. But, hey, they've got Clash of Champions. They've got Hell in a Cell. They're telling a story.
Right.
But in the same way that last year AJ and Samoa Joe didn't have a decisive finish in their WWE title match because Joe was bleep-talking AJ's daughter or wife or whatever, and that caused AJ to lose his mind. So this is 2 years in a row where we haven't had a pinfall submission, a clean win or loss for the WWE championship. WWE has enough staff to come up with a creative finish to continue a story. A million finishes, that was a terrible one. That was a horrible one. But they're telling a story, and the story right now is terrible. The story in the ring tonight was terrible. And that was a match that I wanted to do well. Kofi deserves better. It disappointed me 100%, and it was terrible. Mike, go.
Well, you know, that's strong. I don't think it was.
That's what we're here for. We're not facilitating discussion. We're having strong opinions. You
no,
want
that's
facilitation?
Fair.
Go do 2 to 6 on Monday through Friday.
Yeah, 55 Morrissey Boulevard. The thing is, I think that it was a decent match. In fact, in my notes, I thought it started very strong. Then it slowed down. Kofi had a frog splash in there that got the excitement going. Orton, as you mentioned, with the RKO, that should have been it right there. The count out, very strange. And I think what, like you said, yes, this is the first battle of a long war. You have, we're in the last quarter. I can't believe we're coming up to the last quarter of 2019. So that could close out the year here with these two for the next 3 pay-per-views. And to see how they tried to deliver that with Kofi Kingston's son, and then you have Kofi trying to be that good father with the Kenbo stick at the end of it, it just didn't deliver. It didn't go over so well, where I thought we were going to maybe get a double turn, because he very easily could have turned heel right there. That's not a good look. You know that, Jimmy. When you are a face, a baby face, and then you win the, you retain the championship, and then you beat up your heel opponent with a weapon, you know, kind of a senseless attack, more or less, and it just didn't look good.
So from reading it, because my network froze, it looked like Orton went outside and taunted Kofi's family, which caused Kofi to snap.
And it wasn't even that bad. Like, they didn't deliver it well. Like, he just went over to the kid, and the kid kind of like, oh, yeah, you're really scaring me. Didn't do much. But I think if he went over to the kid and, you know, maybe actually put his hand on him or attacked him or something, sure, Kofi has every right for that. But other than that, though, it wasn't delivered well. Bad finish.
Bad finish to a match that disappointed me.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. But you know what? We're going to get it again next month. Get ready.
Yep. Clash of Champions, stipulation, Hell in a Cell, 3-match series for the WWE Championship, and maybe the Prince will pay for a 4th match, because why not?
Oh, God, yeah. Why not?
$50 million. Get your network to work, and, you know, 11% of your total income goes to your talent roster. But, you know,
maybe they can write it off.
They do have the best legal team in the world.
Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So originally my lead was going to be the match of the night, which was Trish Stratus versus Charlotte Flair.
It was a good match.
It was the match of the night to that point in the show. I thought it was a touch better than the Rollins-Brock match, but if you want to tell me the Rollins-Brock match was match of the night, I won't fight you on it.
Yeah.
Charlotte won by tapping out Trish in the figure eight. This was an indication that Charlotte worked well with a broomstick. Because I didn't think Trish had anything tonight. I think Charlotte had her working shoes on. I think she carried the match. And there are some examples early on where there is a drastically slow pace to make sure that everything was gotten right. I don't want to say it wasn't sloppy. It was just paced very slowly, because I think that this was Trish's first one-on-one match in 8 years. And to the credit of Charlotte, who I wouldn't be surprised if we found out in a dirt sheet, pushed to have Trish win this match. Charlotte did everything within her power to give Trish one great last match. And I think that this match delivered. And I didn't have, I had very low expectations for this match, because I just, 2 weeks to build for it seemed very rushed, and this should have been like a 6-month program with teasers and things like that. But this match I thought was excellent. And what it showed me was what an elite level Charlotte is at. Now, is she her dad? Not yet. But I won't, if you want to tell me that she's on par with you know, Rick in his glory days as far as she is with the women's division now. I mean, she is the best female worker in WWE. I could argue that Tessa Blanchard is the best female worker in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we get to see that match one day. We'll see. But I actually thought that Trish should have won this match, and I thought that Trish should have won by pinning Charlotte following the springboard bulldog, the Stratisfaction. I was a little surprised that Charlotte kicked out of that. But interesting that I really felt like this was a match that showed the difference between what women's wrestling is now versus what it was 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
This was Charlotte just on a completely higher athletic level than Trish.
Yep.
And so that was my big takeaway from that particular match. And now Charlotte gets to brag about retiring Trish because this was Trish's farewell match, something good to add to her resume.
So we think, and yes, that's the indications. You're right. You know, it's funny. I was kind of thinking the same thing too. Like when Trish was in the ring, and sure, good for her having that skill. As we believe that is her first match in, you know, 8 years or whatever. But she did a good job for the circumstances. You know, being a little thinking, maybe she may be a little rusty going up against Charlotte, who's, you know, a lot more loose than she is, but thinking the same thing too, Jimmy. Back when Trish Stratus was, you know, not even of the women's evolution, it was the Divas. And they were kind of so secondary where I don't think there was a real whole lot of appreciation for that women's division. Where now you have two championships. You had a main event at WrestleMania. You now have a women's Royal Rumble. It is a huge difference right now, and yes, you could definitely tell the difference of styles, but to see Trish Stratus in there while she was going one-on-one with Charlotte Flair, it did make me think that she was underappreciated while she was a full-time performer in the WWE because the whole women's division was underappreciated. But I think that the crowd did love that match. They kept saying, this is awesome. Trish used the figure four to try to submit Charlotte a couple of times.
It into the figure eight, which
which was awesome.
I was screaming at my television, as was Corey Graves, about the fact that Trish had her shoulders pinned to the mat and the referee just ignored it.
For about 10 seconds,
yeah,
I'd say.
It was a good length of time where Trish just had her shoulders pinned to the mat and there was no official on it, and they tried to cover it up as best they could. But
Right. But you know what? I thought it was a good match, and I agree. Up until the main event, that was the match of the night. I really had no horse in the race on it going into it. I mean, it would have been cool to have seen Trish there. But if that were her last match, she lost in her hometown, and that's how you do it. You lose the last match, and she had a great pop, and we know that.
And to the point of the 1998 to 03, 04, whenever they switched over, it was probably later than that. But
yeah, like 99.
I remember Trish and Lita, of course, main evented Raw. They were the first women to main event Raw. So they got some feature time. But I remember at the time thinking, wow, Trish and Lita and Jazz and Ivory and Lisa Vachon, who was,
Lisa Vachon.
Yeah.
Marie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Luna Vachon were all like premier women's workers. And now I think to myself, like, wow, like, I don't think they could hang right now with this group of women that they have.
Victoria
is who it is. Yeah. Victoria.
I get the picture of her right here with the collage you made me at WrestleMania 33. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
But now, awesome. Now I look at that, and granted, there's an age difference and all that stuff, but like looking back, I'm like, I don't know that generation of women could hang. Oh. Like the match that I would really want to see, Charlotte or Becky or somebody of that, Charlotte would probably be the elite level performer. And I actually said this to Medusa this year in New York, is I would want to see Charlotte versus Medusa, who WWF fans would know as Alondra Blaze.
Sure.
Because she is noted as the premier worker of kind of the early 90s, and she's living, and she's older now, so it probably wouldn't work. But
her and Bull Nakano,
yeah,
that was her rival. You know,
Sherry Martel would be somebody I'd like to see Charlotte work. Obviously, that can't happen either. But
a little bit.
I'm now wondering if we overrated the Trish Lita, that generation of female worker.
I don't think it was overrated. I think it was underrated, underappreciated, and definitely under the radar. You know, they never got that spotlight. They never had it.
Well, so, Mike, I would say, well, maybe they didn't have the talent to have that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they were underappreciated, in your opinion.
Yeah, it's the talent, and they never, like you said, that there was a main event with...
there was the Raw main event with Trish and Lita.
Yeah,
but that was kind of the showcase.
Every other time, it just kind of was like, whatever. This is a B. It wasn't the big thing.
But Mike, my point is,
I get it,
that they didn't have the talent to be main eventers on pay per views, to be featured in a lot more pay per view matches, and that's why they limited to one match a show, because the talent on the roster dictated the spot on the roster. And if Trish and Lita were the best, then maybe that's why they only main evented the one Raw.
Well, yes, I'm with you there, but also you got to go back in time too. Maybe they weren't given the chance, and I don't think that they really had that push of Stephanie McMahon giving the females a chance, where she is the believer of that. I know Vince obviously came around to it and so forth, but I just think that this has been a big step, and what you've seen here, two generations right there tonight with the SummerSlam, it's come a long way. Good for them.
Well, and I think going back where the best women's wrestling for years and years and years was Japan, and then it invaded NXT, where these women were like, we're going to change everything, we're going to be athletic women, and we're going to go for it. And they were given the opportunity to in NXT, and then as such got promoted to the main roster.
Right.
Whereas prior to Trish and Lita main eventing Raw,
right,
I think the best matches for the women in WWF rings were the Jumping Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls, or that 87 Survivor Series match where you had Moolah leading one team against Sensational Sherry on the other team. And that's really where you saw the start of the Jumping Bomb Angels against the Glamour Girls. And that was Judy Martin just selling her ass off to make the Jumping Bomb Angels look good. And then you had the match at the Rumble, which would have been on USA Network. It was the first Rumble that Duggan ended up winning. But that 2 out of 3 falls match was really good. And then they kind of went away for a little while. And then for whatever reason, it came back. I mean, Rock and Robin was a nothing. I'm getting sidetracked, and I don't want to sidetrack. But I think the point is that at least my point is maybe we overrated that era of women's worker where they should have gotten a chance, but they didn't because they didn't have the talent to have that chance. And now we have a whole roster of women who have the talent to have two titles, to have tag team titles, to main event pay-per-views, and to main event a WrestleMania.
Exactly. And I'll just leave it on this. You remember the TLC in Boston, December 2015, where
Charlotte versus Paige for the Divas title.
But, however, the pre-show match, do you remember that pre-show match?
It was Becky Lynch tapping out. It was Sasha Banks tapping out Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch, exactly. So it's like, wow, how far we've come. Tamina was also in on that, Naomi, and that was a pre-show match. Now they're main eventing, and it's like, okay, they've really stepped it up. They've turned it up, and they've showed everyone that the women are serious now, not just to be in a pre-show, but main event.
The women's tag belts were on the pre-show too. So,
well, no one cares about that, unfortunately.
Oh, I do. Are you kidding me? I love me some Nikki Cross.
Vince McMahon doesn't care about it. Let me make that clear.
Oh, I love me some Nikki Cross. And there are tons of people who love Alexa Bliss. Nikki Cross is fabulous. She's fabulous, Mike.
Well, you know what? I don't think Vince McMahon really cares too much about it.
And I also dig Crazy Chicks.
I love the Iconics. Big fan.
Yeah, they should have been given a little bit better run with the tag belts, but hey, the Bellas were injured and they didn't have anything for them afterwards, which is stupid. Exactly. But, you know, as I said, I dig crazy chicks and I dig crazy characters. The Bray Wyatt entrance was amazing.
Let's talk about that.
Like, they did everything right with that from a production. They overproduced it, but the music, the entrance theme was great. The video transitions and everything. The fact that Bray worked with the mask on was great. The mandible claw into the pin for the finish. And Finn Balor, by the way, it shouldn't go overlooked that his reaction when the lights came on, where he was scared, that's a good thing. And when Balor comes back, they'll do the WrestleMania match with the Demon versus the Fiend and all that stuff. And you know, Finn will get the win there, I would think. But they did a lot of right with Bray Wyatt, so let's see where it goes from here.
And if that doesn't creep you out for years or even for the night, that was bizarre. The lamp, his face was on the lamp.
Oh, it was awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
The detail, I mean, Mike, the detail. That was what it was.
Yeah,
it was so much detail.
It was like a what you see in a Disney World ride. Everything is spot on how they had it all down there. And good for them and the whole character redevelopment for Bray Wyatt. People are in on this, Jimmy. They are in on
this. And that Toronto crowd, it's been a long time since I've seen a good guy squashed where a crowd chanted, "This is awesome," because they dug the whole production of it.
Right. They did. They loved it. And it's going to be interesting to see what his next opponent will be or his next track where he's going to go from here.
And just overall on SummerSlam, as we transition to do some quick fire notes on the rest of the show.
How stupid can I be? Maybe you put him right for the title. Go ahead.
Well,
Bray Wyatt against Seth Rollins.
GD, pal. Doesn't need the title.
Undertaker
never needed the title, pal.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. I didn't mean to get sidetracked. I get a little excited. Go ahead.
I can have him defend the title against Worms, and Randy Orton will win. People will love it.
Yeah.
Pooper
scooper.
Yes. Thank you, John Moxley.
It works.
Just a couple other notes. I was surprised that Becky and Natty opened the show. And Toronto seemed to be all in on Becky, which really surprised me. There were Becky chants during the match. I thought the submission match, they told a really good, simplistic story. The sharpshooter in the turnbuckles was good. The one little rule thing that I had either forgotten about in a submissions match or was a change to customize this match was I always thought a rope break actually broke the submission. You know, there's no disqualifications, but how else do you have to really fight your way out of a submission hold instead of the ropes being able to break it, which I thought was standard operating procedure. But maybe they changed that and they just didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, they can make up the rules as they go, as we know. Natty also had the disarm on Becky, too. I thought she was going to tap out to that. There was one thing, James, I know that you tweeted it out, and I went back to rewind it. Michael Cole made a comment about SummerSlam 1992. Remember this?
Oh, yeah, 90,000 in Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think so, pal. I saw the same thing, too. I'm like, yeah, it's 80,000, dude. 92. What is he thinking of? Detroit, WrestleMania 3?
90,000, brother.
Yeah, exactly. 80,000 Wembley Stadium. So they were way off on that. And they did mention the Jim the Anvil Neidhart with the 1 year passing as it is coming up this week here. But obviously, Natty did not win there. She wore the Canadian flag around her shoulder, too. I thought she'd at least put the Anvil's jacket on, you know, one of the heart jackets. But that wasn't the case. Good match. Good opening match.
Excellent opening match. But I was kind of surprised that they went on first, but,
yeah,
you know, life happens. What went on second was Dolph versus Goldberg. And for me, this Dolph got squashed. The super kick off the start for a near fall, I loved. And I figured as soon as I saw that, that was it for Dolph. Yep. But he got the super kick in. He got a pinfall. I heard the New Age Insiders talk on their SummerSlam preview about the fact that they think that Dolph lobbied for this match because he wanted to look Goldberg look really strong. So that's cool. But I think bigger picture, I have to wonder if WWE has a story for Goldberg. And the idea is to build Goldberg for another dream match, whether it be Roman Reigns, whether it be John Cena, Samoa Joe. I'll take another match with Brock. And if him squashing Dolph is a start to a build to something like that, I'm in for it.
Maybe a number one contender match?
It doesn't necessarily have to be for a championship, but they need stars right now, I should rephrase that. They need people who the casual fan will believe in as a star. And right. Bill Goldberg, for a short run, in the same way that I thought AEW should have signed Bill Goldberg, for a short run to get some other people over or to create a dream match, should be a goal here. Goldberg looked really good in this, and this is Dolph selling his tail off. I did appreciate the fact that he called him a dip bleep, which was tremendous.
And the crowd was just so into Goldberg. Holy cow.
And this is the point, is that the casual fan knows who Goldberg is. So
right.
Even if he's having crappy matches, he's still going to get an intro pop. Everybody's going to cheer for his moves. They'll get behind him. And you need more of that on the show.
Right. You do.
You need more of that.
So you could build something up here with Dolph Ziggler. I know someone tweeted at me earlier saying, wow, we could have had Dolph versus Shawn Michaels. So maybe you finally do have that match there, Dolph versus Shawn, down the line, him going after the big name legends and keep getting squashed. That could happen. So that possibility is there for him. But Goldberg, though, Jimmy, yeah, he could be in for a championship run. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Or at least a featured program run.
Yeah.
Putting the WWE title on him on SmackDown or the Universal title on Raw, it's not the worst idea in the world based on the fact that his crowd reaction is there.
No, yeah.
And you keep him strong. That's all it is. And
it could be good for Seth Rollins. Be a good little
Dolph made him look like $1 million. And you know what else Dolph is good at is comedy shows. So if he comes to an area near you and you want to go see him do comedy, I would highly recommend it.
I got a feeling if he's still in the company at this time next year, he'll be making the rounds in the Boston area, if you know what I mean.
We talk to the same people, and it's really cool that we do. AJ Styles versus Ricochet. I enjoyed this match. I had a moment where I jumped out of my office chair when Ricochet put the Endicon device on AJ Styles. I hope he called Chicago and asked for permission about that. AJ worked on the leg. Ricochet, the story was he just couldn't overcome the odds. That Styles clash out of the twirly, flippy thing off the top rope was really cool. I thought it was really good stuff. Simple storytelling. It's a 3-on-1 match. Ricochet's doing everything within his power. I don't think AJ beating Ricochet hurts him here. And I'm glad to see that the club keeps all the gold. They did something with Finn Balor saying to Finn if he ever needed help, they know where to get a hold of him. Any thoughts on this match, Mike? I know this was the match that you were most looking forward to coming in.
Yeah, it was. And sometimes you don't want to go in overhyped. Sometimes it was good. I also liked how Luke Gallows put on the face paint that he used to wear in New Japan. That was kind of a pretty cool thing. But yeah, Ricochet looked like a real, obviously he's got that superhero gimmick, but that costume and the Hurricane Rana. He did get out of that Styles clash. They work really well in the ring together. They really do. And then, there was another splash by Ricochet that did counter to that Styles clash, as you did say. And I think that we're going to see more of this. I think you're going to see Ricochet get another shot at that United States Championship, where I could totally see him beating AJ Styles next month. Or if AJ were to win, then have Ricochet move on to something else, maybe get a run at the Intercontinental title before they flip over on this wild card rule and keep it on one particular show. So I could see that happening. But I was pretty happy with the outcome there. Two of the most talented guys that work in the ring. And obviously Kofi Kingston's right up there. Those are probably your top three guys, overall performers on the current roster today.
I wonder if we see a Raw match with Ricochet versus Seth Rollins soon that leads to AJ being jealous about getting that match, and then we get an AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins program where we have clearly defined on each side. But that's another story for another time. Any thoughts on Bayley versus Ember Moon?
Didn't do much for me, Jimmy. In fact, I think the crowd was kind of out of that one there, because that was after the Goldberg, where they were just so into it, and then Ricochet, AJ Styles was immediately after that. And then, of course, you know, that was your fourth match of the night, so really calm down match before the Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon one. Crowd just wasn't into it. Bayley did sell Moon, though, I thought. And you know what? I went out on a limb with my pick thinking that Ember Moon would win. Also in the back of my mind that Sasha Banks could come back tonight, but didn't do much for me. How about you?
The crowd wanted Sasha Banks.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd did.
Yep.
Meh match. Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon.
Yep.
This was just a lot of hogwash.
Yeah.
Fans loved Kevin Owens. I did appreciate the finish, where it's a kick to the groin and then a stunner. But I think ultimately that Tuesday night, this is going to get overturned because Kevin Owens, of course, did strike a WWE official in Elias.
Good point. Overturned. But what they're doing here, obviously we know that they're trying to make him the new Stone Cold Steve Austin of 2019. And I think it's pretty clear, if you can name me someone else, go ahead. But I think right now, Kevin Owens might be your top babyface in WWE.
Yeah, he's the hottest guy that they have right now. And you know why, Mike? He's one of the better promos in the company, and he can work.
I mean, going into tonight, I would have said Kofi Kingston. But after what I saw on that finish, no way. He's not a top babyface anymore.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, so I think that's the plan here for Kevin Owens, and that's where we're going here on out. And I do think he will turn eventually, but what we got.
I'd love to see a Kevin Owens chase for the WWE Championship as a good guy.
That'd be awesome.
Because that's his goal now, as he said on Lillian Garcia's podcast, is that he wants to be a good guy.
But then maybe after he wins, go for the turn.
Of course. My last note on SummerSlam is Bret Hart wishing Seth Rollins good luck was kind of cute, especially considering the fact that Becky Lynch, the real-life girlfriend of Seth Rollins, tapped out Natty Neidhart in the opening match. Of course, Natalya Neidhart is the real-life niece of Bret Hart. But maybe the bigger point here, Mike?
AEW.
WWE stole another guy from AEW. Of course, Bret Hart was on AEW's pay-per-view holding up the AEW championship. And so good on WWE. I bet they offered Bret Hart a 5-year, $500,000 contract to procure him from All Elite Wrestling. So good on the WWE for giving Bret Hart a nice retirement fund.
I was thinking the same exact thing because we haven't seen Bret on TV since the Hall of Fame induction the night before WrestleMania when, you know, the anvil went in, the Hart Foundation. But, yes, the Double or Nothing pay-per-view holding up that championship, and it just brought back, going back to that moment there, like, what the hell was going through Vince McMahon's brain at that time? He must have lost his you-know-what. GD, pal, what is he doing on there? All right? He must have gone bananas. And then, yes, Bret, sign the deal. Don't ever appear in the competition again, pal. And he money talks. That's why Bret Hart was at SummerSlam. That is why if they can do what they're doing. They're just flexing the muscle. Doesn't surprise me at all, Jimmy.
I figured once I saw Bret Hart was doing an appearance at SummerSlam Access that he was going to be part of the show, and he signed some sort of agreement with WWE, but it was interesting that he wished Seth Rollins good luck after
without the question.
Match. Do you have any other notes from SummerSlam that you want to touch on?
I thought it was overall the Toronto crowd pretty good. I think the Trish Stratus Charlotte match, that was my favorite up until the main event. I think that the Becky Natty match is also going to be underappreciated because it was so early in the night. But overall, a good pay-per-view. Nothing significant in my book happened up until the end. Not saying that it wasn't anything to not take away, but that was the defining moment with Seth Rollins beating Brock Lesnar. So Toronto this year, and we know the big announcement where it's going to be next year, Jimmy. I can't wait, baby.
Boston, SummerSlam 2020. Should be a good time. I know there are some people from the area, the Garden, who are up there scouting SummerSlam. So it should be a good time. I think what we're going to find out is that they're going to start their access stuff on Thursday. They'll have SummerSlam Friday, NXT Saturday. SmackDown on Friday, NXT on Saturday, SummerSlam Sunday, and then Monday, Raw. And we'll see where it all goes from there. Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance to watch TakeOver?
I did. And, you know, as always, Jimmy, the TakeOver is awesome. It really is. And I loved the triple threat match with the Velveteen Dream, Pete Dunne, and Roderick Strong for the North American Championship. I love Pete Dunne, and I love the Velveteen Dream. And Strong is really good, too, but the Dream is just something else. I think he's going to be on the main roster probably by the Royal Rumble, maybe WrestleMania. He's awesome. And you know what? Underappreciated match was the Shayna Baszler Yim match, too, the submission one, where she won for the submission. I thought that was a really good match. And not taking anything away from the main event, but a good NXT takeover, as always, Jimmy.
So I feel guilty saying this out loud.
Go ahead.
I didn't love TakeOver.
Didn't? Okay.
And specifically, like, it was a good show, but I didn't love the three stages of hell match between Cole and Gargano.
Well, it's 2-1 Cole.
And I think, no, I'm an Adam Cole guy. I thought Adam Cole should have won in Brooklyn, but the story was Gargano, so I got that.
Right.
They made up for that in Bridgeport.
Right.
Their Brooklyn and Bridgeport, Connecticut matches were match of the year for NXT, as far as I'm concerned right now. Mm-hmm. Cole and Gargano, I just felt like were trying too hard. The first fall as a DQ finish felt to me like it was a cheap way of making sure that Cole didn't pin or tap out Gargano twice. And to me, the match was kind of more of a tie than a clear-cut winner. Like, they both go through the table at the same time, and it just happens to be Adam Cole who gets the cover. So it felt kind of like a fluke win than an end of a program. And I feel bad saying this, but I was really disappointed in this match. And that's not to say that it wasn't like, you know, 3 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars, but like, emotionally, I feel like it was kind of a cop-out.
Well, you know what? If you notice my reaction, I did not even mention that at the top of my reaction for the takeover. And it just, I know they had the cage in there too when they both fell through the table at one point. And it just, yeah, I think this could be better. It's too long. It's 40
No, I don't have a problem with the length. I just felt like they were trying. They didn't need this match, but two, they didn't need all the gaga in it because they did 2 out of 3 falls in Brooklyn, which was amazing.
Just let it
one
be
of
there.
The top matches in the company's history. The match in Bridgeport was a one fall match that was outstanding. And again, if you want to tell me that you thought Bridgeport was better than Brooklyn, I won't fight you on it. I think Brooklyn was better than Bridgeport, but that's a discussion. I didn't think this match was anywhere close to those two. And that's what's disappointing. And I feel like it's blasphemous for anyone to ever say anything bad about NXT, but I wasn't feeling this match. And that was my kind of big take. That was my big takeaway from TakeOver in Toronto.
It's very hard to repeat, obviously, but it's even more hard to do it 3 times. And I think that's the situation that they ran into here, where they should have just stopped at the Bridgeport takeover. Just stop. Or bring it back another time if you want to close it out, but not so soon after Bridgeport.
And just to close out, your boy, just to close out with a new Japan thought, your boy John Moxley, Mike, I mean, he choked this G1 away.
Yeah, it's not looking good right now.
He totally choked it away.
Sorry.
Moxley lost the B block. and I have to think that you're embarrassed that he lost four matches in a row. He had a commanding lead in the B block, and he choked it away. Four in a row, Mike. Like, you should be embarrassed. You should be apologizing to me and the rest of our listeners for predicting this guy to win the G1 tournament. He didn't even make the finals. He didn't even win the block.
Appreciate me having a strong take like that for someone to win the block and win the climax there, because he's got to make a name for himself in New Japan.
He's the U.S. champion.
Yeah, but still, you got to make a name for yourself being a climax champion.
Champion.
All right, fine. To quote Ted Sarandis, I apologize 1,000 times.
Matt Taven is the true climax champion, but
I'll give you that.
That's that. Of course, if you don't know, that's Matt Taven's finishing move in Ring of Honor.
Yep.
But the A block, go out of your way. Kota Ibushi won the A block. He defeated Okada in the finals of the A block. The B block was won by Jay White, which I don't see the fascination with Jay White, but whatever they do. So Ibushi versus Jay White is going on. It's about 11:30 right now, so Eastern time it'll be 2 a.m. So most of you guys will be listening to this in the morning, which you'll be able to Google the result if you don't watch it live. The winner of Ibushi versus White will fight for the IWGP Championship at Wrestle Kingdom, more than likely, but they'll probably have to defend their briefcase between now and January, which gets all confusing.
Go do that in your own time.
But Ibushi, I will tell you, as talented as he is, he won the A block. I felt like was a thank you to him for not going to AEW with Kenny Omega.
Right.
It's just a theory. That's all that is.
That's fair.
Ibushi, talented. He deserves the position. And impressive to note that Ibushi came from down 0-2 in the G1 to win the A block. And, you know, that match with Okada was good stuff. Mike, do you have anything to close out?
I was wrong, and yeah, there you go. I'll leave it at that. Well, I do want to tell you, I do want to promote a show coming up, please, this weekend, August the 17th. It's taking place at the, where are we? The Newburyport Elks. It is the Super Summer Smash for Atlantic Pro Wrestling. Brian Malonis, he'll be taking on Simon Grimm. Also, a good tag team match. We got Anthony Green and Mike McCarthy in action against the Demon Ortiz and Vern Vaccaro. And it's going to be a good time there. That is Saturday, August 17th at the Newburyport Elks. For tickets, hit them up on Twitter at Atlantic Pro Wrest, WRES, or AtlanticProWrestling.com. Good people up there. They asked for us to go help them out for their show up in Newburyport, Massachusetts, if you're in the area. And also, they have another one too, James. It's going to be taking place, I believe, in the fall. No specific date, so check out their Twitter handle on that for the latest information.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. And for tonight, folks, you can burn it down.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.